Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. The topic this month, May, is Form of Teaching. Now, of all the elements, of course, in the nine elements of the system, this one sometimes is the most obscure, but actually it also holds all the other eight elements in its own way, because each of the elements is interdependent, but also they have a connection, and kind of on a physical level, this is where all of the elements get connected. And that is in the deliverance, if we may use that word, of the class to the from the master to the student. So you know, the form is not just a group of rules that we put down, or a group of items of information. There's also something that I call the context. What is the context of all these, and how are they placed together? And the context, as we know it, is the first degree class and the second degree class. And this is the form of teaching. So that's what we're talking about when we talk about this. And what I've wanted to do in this particular section is to introduce you as listeners to more of the world community in this sense of the form of teaching, because, you know, each culture has its own challenges, its own gifts, and often they're actually the same thing linked together. And each culture gives to the teaching of Reiki something very special, and I wanted to also be able to have you see this through my conversations with some of the masters that have been teaching in different countries. So today I have with me Upasana Grugan, and she is an American who went to live in South America very young. And she lived in South America, and there she learned Reiki and taught Reiki for many years, and then moved back to the United States. So her situation is really interesting, very different, and has been challenging in a way that I actually can't relate to. I mean, she has told me many stories about it, and I think that it's really important for her to share this story with you, because I find it so moving and touching, and also deepening in my sense of Reiki and how it gets transmitted from master to student. So, Upasana, welcome to the show.
Well, hi.
Well, hi. And just, can you tell a little bit of your story about, number one, how you got to South America, and then how you found Reiki, and then how it was to teach in South America?
Sure. Well, I got to South America. Actually, I went to Mexico for the first time when I was a junior in college way back in 67 and 66 maybe. And just that was to Mexico, and just fell in love, just felt so much at home there. And then I came back to the United States, to the East Coast, for my senior year of college, and met a Chilean and fell in love. And so it's really been love that's moved me around South America. We were married. We had a daughter. And he, as I said, was Chilean. He was a Chilean soccer player at the school I was going to. And in, I think it was around the year 70, I don't really remember, 70, 71, more or less, we went back to live in Chile. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I got there. And I worked in at a regular job like most people do. I'm a Spanish teacher, and I taught Spanish at the Peace Corps for the volunteers, and then moved around. He was part of the Diplomatic Corps. The Chilean Diplomatic Corps moved around. Anyhow, to make a long story short, after moving around to different countries and living in different countries and working, ended up getting divorced, and I moved back to Chile to live with my daughter, because it's where I felt the most at home.
Mm-hmm.
was in Chile that I took my first degree. I was part of the first class in Latin America to come, and it was a German man who came to Chile to teach. And actually, I was living in Ecuador, and I was in Chile visiting some friends, and I was invited to this strange class and wasn't going to go, but felt at the very end, the last day, a draw. And by then, of course, the class was closed. There was no way to get in. There wasn't space. They had a certain number of people that they could take in the class. And so I begged and I cried and so on and so forth until I wiggled my way into the class. And it was a life changer for me. I had gone from teaching English and being a secretary and doing all sorts of things to working with alternative therapies such as shiatsu and macrobiotics, and had a little practice in Ecuador and Quito, treating very, very sick people. And this just felt like it was my language. It really hit home, and I stopped doing everything else and started practicing Reiki. And took it back to Ecuador. To my knowledge, there was nobody else there who did Reiki. So these were back, this was in the 80s, the early 80s, and this was at a time when really this sort of thing was not known in Latin America as such, in most of Latin America, I would venture to say in all of it. And everything was open to me. It was just very magical, and I had a booming practice and gave, which I would never recommend anybody today, but 7 or 8 treatments a day, and, 7 days a week. And,
and this was when you had first degree.
And this was when I had first degree.
Well, that's
right?
Wonderful. Well, did you find that people were open to Reiki because, do you think of because of the culture or because of the lack of medical facilities or their own understanding of, you know, their own concept of the body and illness and how it could be treated?
I think a little bit of all of that. I think it just all came together. It was a time when people were clamoring to do something a little bit different. But at the same time, especially in Ecuador that has a large Indian population, other medicines rather than allopathic medicine were not new to them. You know,
right.
They have a big shamanistic culture, tradition rather, and so people were not so, it wasn't, anything that had to do with energy was not so strange for them.
Right, right.
And it was, I would say, mostly readily accepted even in that country, even by a lot of the medical community.
And
you know, there's 21 different countries in Latin America, so each country is a little bit different. And but as I moved around, I was initiated as a master in 88, and first taught in Ecuador, and then went to Chile, and then Mexico, and all very quickly. It just seemed like the doors opened up to me in an incredible way. I had absolutely no resistance to what I was doing at all in the beginning. None. Zero.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I'd like to go back a little bit and you know, talk about the way that people, in your impression, saw their bodies and had an idea about disease. Like, I'm wondering, did they see conditions of their body that weren't what we would call healthy or normal? Did they see them more as conditions rather than diagnoses? I think that we all, you know, I'm just wondering if that, especially back then, if that was a part of the mix.
Well, I don't know that they actually saw them that way, because in their traditional teachings, they look more from the outside being a cause to their illness rather than...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, in you know, in the Indian cultures, it was always something outside of themselves, like mal de ojo, for instance. You know, somebody that gives you the evil eye,
mm-hmm.
Or somebody that does something or says something to you.
Ah, interesting.
And so, it's not an easy concept, even today for today, for the people that are attracted to come to my classes. It's not so easy for them to take responsibility. For their, you know, the possibility that maybe the way they're living their life is not the healthiest way.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Fascinating.
That's a little bit difficult, that concept. But
mm-hmm. Go ahead. No, you go for it.
Having said that, there's more of a, I would say it would be what I would call faith, that they will be healed.
Uh-huh.
It's not so pragmatic.
Right.
It's more on the spiritual plane.
Uh-huh.
You know, they have a great belief in spirit or God or whatever they believe in, and most of them are Catholic, and so they have a strong faith. And so when they are ill or when their family is ill, they not only look to heal the body as such, but they look, you know, to the doctors to heal the body.
Mm-hmm.
They look for the possibility of spirit to come in and move the body and
mm-hmm.
heal it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
And do you feel like they see Reiki as spirit?
That's an incredible question. I've never thought about it. Well, I would say that those that practice it diligently do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't really know if all of them get that concept. I mean,
mm-hmm.
sometimes there's a big there's fear that what Reiki is going to interfere somehow
right.
with their concept of the Holy Spirit.
Uh-huh.
And so you just have to sort of dance around that and with that and
uh-huh.
in general.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, it sounds like it's a kind of a complicated belief system that if you're not born into it, that it's pretty difficult to put together with our more American idea of disease and diagnoses and so on. Did you find it difficult?
I personally did not find it difficult.
Uh-huh. That's good.
I personally I didn't give it much thought. It just simply flowed for me.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And what I found difficult was coming back to the United States and fitting in into our belief systems here, because it just seemed like after all those years, because I lived in Latin America for 25 years, without coming back to the States hardly at all. And so I just somehow understood, not maybe in an intellectual way, but it became part of who I was.
Right.
And so when I came back here and things seemed to be so black and white to me, and so, yeah, black and white, and they didn't seem to dance. They didn't seem to play, you know. I just was really taken off guard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so I just want to be sure that people don't feel like I'm harassing you about the differences between cultures, but I find them personally very fascinating, and I don't have a lot of ideas about what's better. I find them. I find that when I go to South America, there is a certain way with Reiki that feels really unique. In the sense of my worldwide perspective. And this is kind of something that I want to get to, I'm hoping. So I'd like to kind of go back and to your story and Upasana, and go back to your first degree, which I don't know how long. Did you have first degree?
I did have first degree.
What? How long did you practice first degree before you took your second degree? I guess that's a more clear question.
3 months.
Three months. Uh-huh. So all that time you just practiced.
That's right.
Great. And then When you took second degree, what was that like?
Well, first of all, I understood that you had to be accepted for second degree. So I was very nervous because I traveled from Ecuador to Chile to do this, and it was a great leap of faith. I didn't know if I was going to be accepted.
Uh-huh.
And actually, I never did get my personal interview for one thing or another. This Reiki master that came from Germany, I don't know, he had some problem or something and never got to me. So I was terrified that I had put everything together, which for me was a pretty much of a hardship to make that trip and be there and be present and not know if I could do it. But anyhow, I was accepted. And it was a weekend away at the beach. And our first degree was too. We slept there. It was really very nice out in the country. And this was at the beach. And it was a very intense workshop. You know, I remember practicing from Friday night until Sunday after midday and not really knowing what had hit me. I was very frightened that I was going to forget the symbols. I didn't really know too well the people that were there. There was not a sense of community, and so it was a very scary experience for me.
Uh-huh.
But I survived it somehow. here I am. I felt that it was so different from first degree. You know, that first degree was so loving and touchy and feely and, you know, all the giving all the treatments and everything, and then second degree all of a sudden was this mental thing. And I might add to that back then, this was in 86, at least the way I was taught second degree, it was very extensive. It was not the simple second degree that I know today and teach myself.
Uh-huh.
There was a lot of affirmation work and,
uh-huh,
you know, this sort of thing that went along with it. So it was full, yeah.
Yeah. And how was it if we're talking about cultures, having a German Reiki master come to Chile? Was that a kind of dissonance at all?
No. It was this was an amazing cultural thing because he taught the class in English, so that was not his language.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he taught the class in English, and there was an interpreter there. Of course, I spoke English, so I understood what he was saying in English, but the Chileans just loved him, you know, just loved him, and we all did. He was a little bit standoffish.
Uh-huh.
You know, he would teach the class and go back to his room. He didn't hang out, so we didn't get to know him personally,
uh-huh,
as such, and that's a little bit different than the way it is in Latin America. But it kind of added to the mystique, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, of him being the big maestro, you know, the big teacher. And,
right.
And I don't think he did it for that reason. That's the way he is.
Uh-huh.
Very quiet.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because, I find that way back then, we were just, all of us who were teaching Reiki were just kind of winging it. We just had enthusiasm and goodwill and our hands to teach us as we went along. And that's really interesting as a form of teaching, you know, how the master presents themselves and how they act with the students. And if it becomes a class, which I think as a German, he would be more familiar with having classes and having a separation between that and socialization. Whereas, you know, in other cultures, if you don't have the socialization, then the class somehow never takes place.
Right.
You know, and so what I did as an American, when I first started teaching, you know, everybody was a little bit shy and so on. So we had a lot of tea break. And and we had tea, you know, tea and coffee as people came in, and cookies. We, of course, fed people all the time. And and then during the class, I would have a tea break, like often before people would be initiated. I'd have a tea break, and then, it just got to be this kind of social thing. And then when we had our weekly or monthly Reiki exchanges, they also became social. And finally, only about 25 years later, maybe 20 years later, did I realize that I did not want to have a social event, that I really wanted to have a class, and I needed to have that separation. So then I just nixed the tea breaks, and it was an interesting shift for me. I mean, that's 20 years of tea breaks. That's a lot of years. However, when I went to Australia, I was told in no uncertain terms that we absolutely had to have a tea break, that it was not possible for them to sit for 3 hours without a tea break. So we did. And it was not as social as it was in the States. It wasn't like an escape from, this is getting too serious or too woo-woo, or it's too, there are things that I can't really talk about, so I'll be social. That's kind of how it felt to me, and kind of how I had it in myself anyway. That was my translation. Whereas in Australia, when we had tea breaks, it was specifically for tea. And then when they finished it, we were back to the class. So that was an interesting difference in and of itself. Yeah. So this whole thing about it being a social event or a class is really a part of this form of teaching that I feel like it really varies according to culture.
Right. Well, I still have one break. Mm-hmm. In the middle of my class, and that's just, and I have invented, I don't know where I got it from, but somehow or other that this was part of our tradition, and that Takata, when she taught and the people came in from the countryside and they brought all these wonderful baked goods, and we'd get together and Takata would tell her stories. I don't know where I heard that story from either, but somehow or other I heard it somewhere. And I asked them the last day to bring something and share when the class is over, and so there's something from them. And in some places it's quite elaborate. In other places it's, they just pick something up at the store. But I think especially the Latin Americans appreciate sharing in that way.
Yes.
Over food.
Yes.
Even if it's tea and
right.
cookies,
Right.
Yeah. And I totally relate to what you're saying, and I, over the years, this tea break has gotten shorter and shorter.
Right, right.
And more to the point, more to right. having tea than, yeah.
Right. Well, one of the things that I've just done, and it's interesting, it just comes to mind now as we're speaking, is that I read this book called Writing in the Sand by Thomas Moore, and that's M-O-O-R-E for you listeners, and he studied to be a priest and was in the seminary for many, many years. And then he decided not to be ordained. So he left the priesthood or the preparation of priesthood and became a psychologist, or maybe even a psychiatrist, I'm not quite sure. But he's written some beautiful books about that I can only describe as sort of psychology with a very strong spiritual bent. And I've really been inspired by his books. But this book talks about the Gospels and about Jesus as a teacher and how he was with his students. And it's a fascinating book. I really recommend that you read it because some of the things that he describes feel like where we get to in Reiki. But anyway, he has this wonderful thing about Jesus being an Epicurean, that he loved to drink and have meals with his students and with the people that were listening to his lectures and so on. So there are all these stories about, turning water into wine and loaves of bread and fish and so on. And he just says that this is not just a perchance. This is something that has spiritual significance.
Mm-hmm.
this thing of breaking bread together. And I found that to be really quite interesting. So I'm holding this a lot because I'm always inviting people to lunch or dinner or tea or something. And quite often, they're very intense talks.
Mm-hmm. I can vouch for that.
Yeah. Upasana being one of my students and being invited to lunch and then finding out that this is not just a little social event. But, you know, it's interesting to just cogitate on this thing about having a tea in, you know, in a Reiki class, because my grandmother's classes were shorter, and she absolutely didn't have any kind of break. No bathroom break, no water break, no anything. However, when she was in British Columbia, because of the culture she was in British Columbia, it was a community culture. I mean, these people were in a community themselves. So when they came to meet, and they traveled often from very far away, but they were in tree planting communities and so on, they would bring their whole family, their dogs, and all their food, and they would just bring it for the whole, you know, week that they were together, and set up a, you know, their own kitchen, and they would just, you know, practice Reiki and eat, and she would become a little bit of a part of that. So maybe that's maybe where your stories came from.
That sounds like the story I heard, see?
Yeah. But it wasn't in her class. She was very strict about her class. Yeah. So it's interesting, I think. I don't mean to go on and on about this, but I find that this particular piece for me was really important, because as a master, I realized that my kind of, I would say, judgment about my students seeing Reiki as a social event came from me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I changed that idea, then it was very different. You know, it became very different. So even, you know, in my own understanding of where I was, it shifted people's understanding of what Reiki was for them. So it's interesting. But in Latin America, I know that bringing food and sharing food is a really important ritual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think in all the countries, and especially the celebration that I have made a part of my classes at the end, you know, after they've gotten their certificate and and had the picture taken and the whole thing, sometimes the celebrations are very, very elaborate.
Uh-huh. And very beautiful.
They really enjoy it. They really enjoy bringing a part of themselves.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. So, when you began to teach in Latin America, did you find, you know, how would I say this? Did you model yourself after your first and second degree master, Saman was his name? Did you fashion your classes after his, or did you feel like you had enough time in between to kind of have your own personality in your class?
Oh, I didn't have enough time. There's no doubt about that. We wouldn't even go into that. But I copied his format.
Uh-huh.
You know, I copied his format, and to me, that's the way it was. I didn't know anything else. That's
right.
The way I was taught, and that's the way I taught.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I did it in the same order, and I used the same music. And but I'm quite different from Saman. You
uh-huh.
know, I mean, well, first of all, I'm female, and second of all, I speak Spanish, and so
right.
that, you know, not having the interpretation in between made a difference.
Huge difference.
And time and everything
right.
else.
Right.
And so little by little I dared to do things like change the music. And I'm not a changer. I'm not a changer in most things in my life, and I probably sin on the side of being too rigid, you know, and too stuck to the form, but, or the form that I've been taught. I feel comfortable that way. I feel safe, and I feel free. If I have a form, I feel very free.
Well, say more about that. That sounds like a kind of strange thing to say.
If I have to invent something or, I'm just not a curious sort of person, you know, if I have received something that has touched me so deeply the way Reiki has, in the way that it has, and it works for me that way, then I don't see a need to change it. And it's really been a handicap because over the years, those people, students of mine or colleagues that have gone off and done something creative with what they've been taught, it's been very difficult for me to accept that. Because I just don't get it. I don't, you know, it's not a part of the way I think or the way I feel. So when I received first degree Reiki, it was a very deep experience for me. It really touched my soul. And so much so that it just catapulted me into a whole new life. And it was very fast and very furious, and it never occurred to me to change what I had been taught. So when I had the opportunity, and I had never known another Reiki master, and I had never been in another Reiki class, so it never occurred to me that it could be done any differently, you know. So the first time I was able to be with you in a teaching scenario, not in first or second degree, but in some of the master's workshops, and things were done a little bit different, or people talked about, for instance, information meetings or information sessions, I think they're called. What they did here in the United States, what they do here, the first session is sort of like an information meeting. I just didn't know what they were talking about, you know. I mean, it was just weird to me. I think it's been a handicap for me over the years, you know. But I have felt very free to be who I am and to flow with what goes on in the class, keeping it in a certain format. So that is why I say I feel free. I'm very much who I am in the class. I'm very comfortable. And, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because I think that's a great lesson for, well, depends on, it's a great teaching, and of course each of us take the teaching in our own way, I would put it that way.
Yeah.
But, this whole idea that form can provide freedom is a really interesting one, especially, I think, for Americans, because, you know, I think we're encouraged to be creative, and we are encouraged to see that form doesn't necessarily give you freedom. And that has not been my experience. But I've learned it through Reiki. It's like this form that my grandmother taught, I also didn't want to change it. And I was shocked that people would even think about changing it. Like, I never imagined that. And then when I realized how human it is for each of us to come to a place where we want to make something our own, you know, by changing some little thing in it, and rearranging the furniture in a room, for instance, or whatever, that there are times in our lives when we need to resist that particular feeling or be able to be free within the form. And I think that you've, you know, in your natural state of being, have achieved that, which is really good. But not all of us got that, had that gift. So, you know, when I was, when I was a young master, whenever something would appeal to me or I found it useful in my own life with, with Reiki. I added it to the class, and then eventually what I realized is that I didn't need this, and I was, you know, ending up not really teaching Reiki in some respects. So I dropped all of it through a very wonderful experience that happened in Hamburg, in a class that I did in Hamburg and Germany. And after that, I felt really free to be with Reiki in the form of the classes I was taught, and to be able to be myself within that form. And that was a great lesson for me. But it took me about 12 years.
So. Well, you know, when I was taught, a lot of that stuff, quote unquote, was part of the form.
Uh-huh.
And I learned it, such as angel cards or something like that.
Yeah, you know? Angel cards is a great example.
Right, or this extensive processing. I mean, the class was not good unless everybody cried and screamed and, you know, just had these tremendous emotional processes. And that was part of that time, and I thought it was part of the form. So I also have experienced, as that has been stripped away, and that happened for me because Reiki is so incredible. It just always teaches me. You know, like somebody that comes, we used to do the Sufi dances in the class and ended, and they were spectacular, and they were emotional, and, you know, they were incredible. And yet, one day, somebody came to a couple came to the place in Cali and asked where the Reiki dances were. You know, well, that was a clue to me that the dances had to go, because what had seeped out, what somebody had told them and what had stuck in their mind was that Reiki was dancing, you know? And that's the way I have been able, that's why I say I feel free in the form, because I know that Reiki's going to teach me what I need at that moment and at that point in time. You know, and each class is different. It has the same format, but it's different because the people are different and their needs are different. But they all get the basic treatment, you know, and they all get the story, and they all treat one another. And, you know, those are just things that I will not think. I would feel arrogant to try to change those. Yeah.
So when you, after these years of teaching in Latin America, then when you came to the United States, we'll pick up the story now from back a little ways, and you came to the United States, you said that things became more black and white. So I'm just wondering if you can give me an example of that, what that black and white was for you.
Well, when I sit on an airplane, or when I'm anywhere in Latin America and somebody's sitting beside me and we strike up a conversation, which is almost always, no matter who it is that's sitting beside, it's a conversation and it flows. And, you know, oh, well, what's your name and what do you do? And it just goes and goes. When I come back into the States, my experience, and this could be me, but my experience is that I can sit beside a person for an hour and never say a word.
Right.
Or I can make a comment to that person and it won't go any further than that comment, or it might get a one-word answer or a comment back. So I've had a difficulty myself flowing in this culture. That's what I mean by black and white. You know, I can't seem to get into the dance step here. You know, it's another dance, and I have been back here for 12 years now. But
wow,
you know,
really? That's amazing.
Yeah, you know, I can't find the beat. Somehow or other, I'm off beat. And so that's in all parts of my life. I'm beginning to, you know, make friends, and I mean deep friendships with compatriots of mine, and it's beginning to come, but it's been a really tough thing for me. Yeah, it has been.
Well, I know that you go and teach in El Paso, which is definitely a multicultural city. And I'm wondering if that has any flavor of what you experience in Latin America, or if it's a totally different kind of cultural experience.
Well, it's different and I love it because it's a combination of the two. It's just because most of the people that are in my class or that come for treatments are Hispanics being all Mexican actually. And they've been in this country, so they go I mean, this is a I kind of imagine this. They're going through what I go through in Latin America. They're going through here in this culture. And it's a mixed language. It's an entirely different Spanish. They have their own language that you really need to speak both English and Spanish to understand it.
Really?
So it's, yes, it's very interesting. It's they really slay the Spanish, so to speak. I mean, they just mix it with English, and to me, as a language teacher, that's fascinating. But the heart is there, the soul is there. So yeah, it's great for me. I love it. I really
Great.
do. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
There could be more places like El Paso for me, but for some reason or other, it just hasn't happened yet. Maybe in the future.
Maybe. Yeah, great. Well, so do you teach your classes in Spanish and English there, or in one of the other languages, or?
Well, I up until this last time that I went, I taught them in Spanish. And a lot of times the younger people answer me in English because they have either come as small children to the United States or they've been born here to Mexican parents, and they don't feel so sure about their Spanish. It's strange. Yeah, it's a weird thing. But this last time I gave my first class in English there. I've given classes in English, but not too many. And I was frightened. I felt very inadequate. I thought, what's going to happen when I tell the story in English? I'm going to bungle it all up. And, this has been after 23 years of mastery, so that sounds really stupid that I wouldn't. But I was frightened that I couldn't put the soul into it that happens for me. But I was wrong. I was absolutely wrong. And it was a beautiful class, and it came out just great. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that even though English, quote, is your native language, although that's kind of up for grabs now because he lived in Latin America so long, that would be an issue for you. That's fascinating for me. So can you talk a little bit about the soul? Because I think we go back also to the oral tradition in the sense of when you tell the story or when you teach, is your head more thinking about what is the right word and rather than just letting it flow?
Well, see, it does in Spanish. The words just come out. Or maybe it's been so many years or whatever, but it just comes out. So it's not really me speaking, although it is part of me. In English, I just couldn't find the words,
Fascinating.
and the words have a different meaning. Sometimes I'm embarrassed by the words in English, whereas especially the spiritual words
Oh, do you
in
have an
Spanish.
example?
Oh, gee, I wish I did.
Well, maybe it'll come to you.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But, words that have, with a mystical experience of Macao Sui on the mountaintop, right? To me, that's the fun part of the story, and I'm not embarrassed by that at all. But here, in English, when I tell that part of the story, it's like, oh, yeah, they're going to say to me, right, come on, she's some sort of a religious fanatic, or, I know this is mine. These are parts of myself that I have to heal. But and that's what it showed me. But then then I don't speak as fluently when I come up against something like that. I don't feel that I have the right words to communicate the depth of what I'm saying. It flows, it doesn't, or it doesn't flow in a different way.
Oh,
I can get very emotional when I tell the story. know, sometimes I get caught up in it, and it, and I get emotional about it. Or when I say the other interesting thing, you know, are the precepts.
Uh-huh,
because
right.
Because I can get really teary with the precepts. I don't know why, but I just can. And to me, in English at first, they were flat.
Uh-huh. Because
they were flat. They were words.
Uh-huh.
It's like I didn't embody the words.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But that's beginning to change.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting to, I'm going to ask a few other people that I know who have switched languages, like Marta Getty, for instance, who've been on the show several times. She is an American, but she teaches, well, she's lived in Italy for years now, and she teaches there, and when she taught her first class in Italian without a translator, it was really intense for her. And more than that, it was, she said, a really different shift of her mind. You know, that she had to really change that. And that's interesting language.
Yeah, it is. It's fascinating.
It is fascinating because I know when I learned my little bit of German and I finally went to a German school, I realized that I was learning about how the German mind, what their cultural habits are as they think and so on. There's some kind of essence of the culture that you get through language. And I guess that's not being familiar with one and then coming back to it and so on. There's a whole cultural straddle that you have to do.
Yeah, and you know, my whole adult life I wasn't here.
Right.
So many things are different, and I'm from the East Coast, and I came to the West Coast, and
that's like
coming to a different country.
Totally.
You know, it really is.
And it is, for sure.
Yeah.
It
and
is,
so
for sure.
There were just all these things that I never imagined, you know,
uh-huh.
I never imagined. And so I'm sure that it's not all about Reiki and teaching classes, it's about me, and mm-hmm. I really feel that I'm very blessed to have mm-hmm. this opportunity to go so deeply into my own healing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
Reiki really takes me there.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's really interesting because it feels like this form of teaching has been this context in which you've been able to carry from one culture to another inside of you. And this has created sort of highlights of where the healing needs to happen,
mm-hmm.
you know, where it doesn't quite meet mm-hmm. with who you are at this moment. And that's really beautiful to see that as a part of your practice, not just, you know, teaching, but also as a part of your practice as a student.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really.
Oh, definitely. I think that these 12 years, I was so out there before I came back to the United States. I mean, I just was out there teaching all the time. And this is these 12 years that I don't teach as much, has given me so much more time to work on myself.
Uh-huh.
Use the Reiki on myself.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And work on my family and things like that. That before I was just getting on and off of a plane and from
right.
one classroom to another, right?
Right. So you still go down to Chile, for instance, and teach. And how is that? Is that really easy for you?
Yeah. I go to Chile, Colombia, and Mexico. And I go once a year, usually, and I love it.
Do you just fall back into an old part of your, well, now it would be an old familiar part of yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's like coming home for me.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that in our travels around that we can have a sort of home base for Reiki, for our Reiki practice and our Reiki being.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Because I feel that I've traveled around the world and I love teaching in many different cultures. It's been really fun and sometimes very challenging because because it is, because sometimes the challenges go against my very nature, but it's important for me to honor the cultures of the different countries. So, but when I come home, it's I used to not like coming home, but now I do, because I also have this feeling that this is the place where I belong, and this is where Reiki came to me.
Mm.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so thank you. Well, yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was going to say it's my pleasure, because I have wondered over these years, you know, just why does this not pick up for me here in the States? It's been a big mystery for me, and still is. And so when you asked me to talk a little bit about culture on, you know, for the radio program, I thought, wow, Phyllis is opening up the opportunity for me to really get at this point, you know, and I trust that our conversation will mm-hmm. move something for me that that hasn't been moved for some reason or other.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh.
It's a mystery. It's a mystery, but it's magical, so I know something's going to move here.
Oh, well, that'll be interesting. Do let me know.
I will.
Well, dear listeners, this is the end of our time, and Upasana, thank you so much for coming and sharing with us so candidly.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Yes,
for me too. And I hope the listeners will benefit, or, you know, if they want to talk to me about it or email me, that would be great.
Okay, thank you very much. Uh-huh. I appreciate that, and I'm sure they do too. So for you listeners, and I know that many of you do not live in the United States and you were taught Reiki in another country than the United States, and perhaps another country than where you're living now, and wondering if there's if you are holding some interesting insights into your own practice and finding out where your home base is as your Reiki being. So this is not so important. It's just an interesting facet of our world culture as we see it now today, and how Reiki has been one of the things that has been in some way unchanged through all the cultures. And I've been able to travel this Reiki journey and see how each culture takes what they need from Reiki, from the Reiki practice, and that they give also their own gift to the Reiki practice. And I've been really fortunate to be able to be the recipient of the challenges and the gifts equally. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.